So as what I just said, that today we're going to figure out the Hilbert space of the Virasoro algebra. So again, let's recap. It's been a weekend. But let's hope that you remember this. That we have a cylinder, and we all find these together, that if you do a transformation, the exponential transformation, and you can map this. Yeah, I have a silly notation, but I have to stick with it. And you can map a cylinder to a complex plane. And then what we discovered in the tutorial is that the time evolution of the cylinder, so this is the closed string at some point in its time revolution, and it's mapped onto a circle on the complex plane. And then this is sometime in the future, and then it gets mapped into some large radius. So what we claim is that the time evolution on a cylinder is the same as the radial expansion. And importantly, at x0 goes to minus infinity, that it's mapped onto the origin. What else we learned is that we have some primary field. And then primary field has this very nice property, which you showed many times, that if I calculate the correlation function, two-point correlation function of the primary field, we'll have everything is fixed except some normalization function. Some numbers D, who cares? And then what we also learned is that we have T Z as the chiral field, one component of our energy momentum tensor, it admits a expansion, Laurent expansion, and we call the coefficient L. It's like the other L's that has infinite algebra, but now we have a quantum effect.
Gang.
Yes.
Bars over one of these.
Yes. Thank you. See, I'm not using my brains. It's very bad. Okay, very good. And we say that we can write Ln as the counter integrals of the energy field, Tz, the chiral field. So we're just going to do a fun fact calculation and ask the following question. What's the commutator of Ln and phi w? So we're just going to write it as counter integral dz, z n plus 1 tz. Remember, the cute thing we know is that whenever we see a counter integral, we can deform our counter integral somehow such that the commutator become a product. And then the next step is, of course, writing down the operator product expansion of Tz and phi w, which is given by h phi z minus w square and the partial phi z minus w plus dot, dot, dot. We certainly do not care at all what to the regular terms because it's counter integral, so really only poles matter. So then the first term will give you phi h, and then you have to do one derivative on the z and replace it by w. And then the second term, it's just reading off the pole, which is this guy. So in there, again, we use this thing repeatedly, which is called the Cauchy integral. Says if you have fz, and then you have z minus z0 to the n plus 1, what you get is the pole . So let's just remind ourselves that all the 2D CFT are defined by a very important OPE called the TT OPE. And the first two terms are the same as Euro. And then there is the fourth pole, which is important to give us the central charge. And then from this, we got the established Virasoro algebra, which we spent a whole day on it. And plus the Euro term that the classical physics also have. Okay. So I think this is all the things we need to use today. And down to 4 bars. I think it's less than 4 bars. Okay. So today's plan is that first we're going to be defining something called the in and out state, which is basically the asymptotic past and the asymptotic future if we're starting particle scattering. And then we'll study the property of a vacuum of a 2D CFT. And then we claim that we can build the Hilbert space, which using something called the highest weight method. Weight is just, I have no idea why, but the weight is the equivalent of saying eigenvalue of some operator. It's called the highest weight. And then after that, we can create something called descendant states, which is like you can derive these descendant states from the highest weight state. And then last, if we have time, that is, if you insist, we're going to shorten this lecture to compensate David. We might not talk about it. But there is a miracle. It says that we find all this descendant state and which they become operators. We'll talk about that in a minute. All in CFT language, fields, they don't matter. The only correlation functions you ever care about, which has all the physics, relies on the primary field. These just don't matter. So let's get started with a very famous correspondence called the state operator correspondence. So this, you should find this is a very crazy thing to do. After taking the automatic quantum field theory, well, this is also called a QFT3 course, but from your past experience, what is a state? A state, for example, a one particle state is a state with a certain momentum, which is like some creation operator acting on a vacuum. But what's momentum operator? Momentum operator is something crazy, like it's an integral of whatever, and it has some pi as a dot, some dot phi, something like that. It's highly non-local. Okay, so there is a caveat, is that it's a state local operator corresponds. But this thing is not local at all. And if you go the other way, what's a field? Local operator, according to CFT definition, it's a field. So we have a scalar field. What's the state related? It's a wave function, which depends on some space slice, and how this field is defined on this space slice, and then we could define this wave function that depends on that, which is also highly non-local. So now you claim that there is a one-to-one correspondence between a state and a local operator. That's crazy. It is crazy, except that once upon a time, well, actually, it's an infinite past. If you go to the infinite past, and the thing we're doing is 2D CFT, this is actually possible. Because what we learned from this cylinder and the complex plane map is that when you take time, x0 goes to minus infinity, what the conformal transformation do is exactly mapping the space slice to a point. So at the infinite past, the definition, the state could be depending on the local operator at a point. So that's exactly what we're going to do. The in state is defined to be, I have a primary field. There should be some primary field in our CFT. We grab one of them, and then we bring them to the origin. So this is what we defined as the asymptotic in state. Since the origin is the infinite past in the CFT language, this is a reasonable thing to do. And then the next thing is we want to define what is the out state. Of course, we know how to define it. We'll take the in state and do the Hermitian conjugate of it. And you're like, yeah, see, people laugh. You're like, you didn't do anything. Okay, that's right. We should do something better than this. Well, the right vacuum would just conjugate it to the left vacuum, but we should really think about how do I define phi dagger, z, z bar, if I want to have any say about what's an odd state realistically, and that we can do calculation. So there's one thing. So when we take Hermitian conjugate, there is one thing has changed because we decide to leave on Euclidean spacetime, which is take a tie, t. So in the real case, in the case with QFT, you have done it, we insist we Hermitian conjugate some operators, but the spacetime is still spacetime. We don't do anything about it. Except now we're in Euclidean time, which is defined to be it. Which is in our case that the x0 will go to minus x0. So if you look at our map, which is e to the z is e to the x0 plus I x1, this is going to become e to the minus x0 plus I x1, which is e to the x0 minus x1. So z actually goes to 1 over z bar. So the first thing we want to emphasize that the phi dagger should be something like related to phi at 1 over z bar, 1 over z, and with something. So for the something, I'm just going to throw it out there that it's should be 1 over z bar to the 2h, 1 over z to 2h bar. And I'm actually using my brains, so this is not a mistake. It's a z bar to the 2h and a z to the 2h bar. So this is just like a proposal. And now, of course, I should demonstrate that this is a sensible thing to put in front of my field. So now let's show that why would we want to have such a great factor? Oh, that one is stuck. Why would I do that? So the first thing is that now you have an in-state and out-state, which is sensible to say, what's the norm of our in-state? Right? What's the inner product of these two things? So let's see, the out-state and the in-state, according to what I write, there should equals to 1 over z bar to the 2h and 1 over z to the 2h bar. Not the h bar, that's a constant. Phi 1 over z bar 1 over z. And for the in state, I'll just be sloppy and put it next to the origin already. But the other one, I counted this is point. I have to take this limit because I'll take z, z bar goes to 0. And for the other one, it's 0. If I do this, if I be sloppy, I'll be writing a bunch of infinity, which doesn't make any sense. But on the other hand, whenever we see infinity, we're always very happy to recognize that 1 over z is a holomorphic function. So we must be able to, it must be a conformal transformation. So let's do that because we like zeros better than infinity. So now we're just going to take cos a bar, cos a goes to 0. And now we have cos a bar to the 2h, cos a to the 2h bar. And then we have phi. Cos a bar, cos a, and then this one is just the 0. Yay. So now it's the one we need to use the correlation function result from here. Right? That, if you apply that formula, we realize this thing equals to d over cos a bar to the 2h, cos a to the 2h bar. Which cancels. Very nice. So we claim this, that our in-state and out-state is normed to be d, whatever that normalization constant you choose to be. So this is demonstration number one, says, well, that proposal is sensible, because if I do that, I have a norm which is finite. It's pretty good. There's no infinity there, and it's not zero. And then the second thing that make this proposal sensible, which now I'll only demonstrate for the chiral field, which is phi z, and let's say it admits a Laurent expansion, and then the expanded mode is phi n. That's a sensible thing to do. We did it before. And remember that this 2 is because Tz has conformal weight 2. And you also will do the following thing to show that why it's nice to extract this conformal weight and then do the expansion. So now we, of course, we wonder what happens to phi dagger z bar. One way is we want to expand this to be phi dagger n z bar to the n plus h. And on the other hand, we know what this guy is. This guy is that thing. So this guy is 1 over 1 over z bar to the 2h, 1 over z 2h bar. Okay, I only care about the first part. And the phi z bar, using the definition we just write, is z bar n plus h phi n. Phi dagger z is phi of 1 over z bar. So it's not like. So we should plug in 1 over z bar there, not the z bar. So it should be 1 over z bar to the n plus h. So this is just the definition of a mode expansion as before. And this is using the knowledge how phi dagger and phi is related there. So now I can collect what happens to z, all this z bar, which gives minus n plus h. And now we're going to use the trick says that if I'm summing over all the integer, and then if I let n goes to minus n, I'll get the same result. Right? I'm summing over all the integers. So if I swap n for minus n, that should be the same. And now if you compare with my mode expansion, you realize, okay, we really should expand the mode expansion with the conformal weight there. Because if we do that, we have the very nice result is that the phi n dagger equals phi minus n. And which if you remind that ourselves about this generators of Virasoro algebra, this actually tells you L n dagger equals the L minus n. Okay, so the next thing to do is to study our vacuum. So our vacuum has this property. Well, we want this property is that since it's energy momentum tensor acting on zero, acting on the vacuum, we hope this thing is finite. Well, all zero, but it doesn't have infinite energy. If your vacuum already have an infinite amount of energy, that seems bad. So what we do is to use the mode expansion acting on this vacuum. And what we conclude is if n equals to minus 2 or less, it's fine at z equals 0. But if n equals minus 1 or more, this thing going to run into the trouble at z equals 0, which we want this way, we want to define all the in state. So if we run into trouble, that's not good. Well, the one way to fix it is to demand that Ln annihilate the vacuum for all this problematic ends. So if this part give you some, if the 1 over this part give you something infinity, we want the other part to give you 0 so that hopefully everything would work out. So you can, of course, conclude if we Hermitian conjugate this, that we know that Ln must be annihilating the left vacuum if n is smaller than equal. Not bad. So now we have some in states, some out states, and then it's basically defined by the local operator. We make it the local operator bring to the origin such that they are really local And then we have some Carrier field. It has mode expansion. And we study our vacuum. Vacuum is annihilated by a bunch, infinite tower of this generator, but more than, very hard to say half of infinite of them, but they get annihilated, they annihilate the vacuum. So now we're going to try to build the Hilbert space of all this infinite tower algebra. Right here. Our goal is build a Hilbert space of this guy. And from the face of some of you, I can see you were like, this is hopeless. Yeah, that's exactly what I interpreted. You were like, I don't want to build a Hilbert space of infinite algebra. But the hope is not lost. You might have heard about this, that the OB1 is our only hope. But you know, you have been lied to. This is not true. And you might have also heard that the R2D2 is our only hope. No, this is a lie. The truth is that the SU2 is our only hope. Like, this would be one thing I want you to take away if I'm teaching the group theory. Okay, so let's lightning review. What's SU2 algebra? I'm not gonna do that crazy squishing up all my ladder thing. Okay, SU2 algebra. You should have heard about this a lot. So there is a J plus, a J minus. It's basically algebra about spins. J plus and J minus give you back J3. And J plus, J minus, X commutator with J3 is plus minus J3. So this is the SU2 algebra you know about. And the idea how to build this is it says, I'll pick a highest weight state, which means it has spin J, and if you measure the magnetic moment, it's also J, it will give you, so these states are labeled by which representation you are in, and then labeled by the highest, the eigenvalue of J. So if you, of course, if you add a spin one state, but the spin is zero, it should give you the F. And then we say that the highest state J exists. And this highest J has this property that if I'm in the highest state and if I try to keep raising it, you fail. You get a zero. And then the property of J minus is that that guy will be lowered to something J minus, which some normalization constant, I don't care. Well, it's not zero, but it's some normalization thing. And then in SU2, you have the really nice result that if you keep acting J minus, eventually you're going to hit this thing. And it says, oh, this annihilates that too. So lightning review of SU2 algebra. So now what are we going to do? Because we're going to build the Hilbert space, we're going to use the same method. The thing we need to find is the highest weight state. We're only going to build one representation. It's already an infinite representation. So the thing we really need is some state that we can call the highest weight. So which means of all this tower of algebra, I have to pick something analogous to J3, which you might have heard of. J3 is called the Catan generator. It's basically one. You have an algebra of three generators, so you want to pick the maximally mutually commute ones. For this one, there's one, J3. And for this one, if we look at this algebra carefully, don't even worry about this quantum part. If you just look at this, it's n minus m. So none of them are going to be mutually commute with others. So they are all mutually not commuting. Which I would say, let's pick L0. And it makes sense. If you pick L1, it would be like, why don't you pick L minus 1? So if you have that infinite amount of them, okay, this is very sloppy in math, but I will say I pick the middle one. So let's do it. Well, the other reasoning is, remember the lecture 2 days ago, that the L0 is something related to dilatation. And dilatation on this class, on this plane is corresponding to time, which means L0 basically is a energy, which is nice, isn't it? Okay, so we're gonna do this. So L0 acting on the in state, well, that's the only state we have. It's either that or vacuum. Vacuum is zero, done. So this is our only hope because we only have one state. So let's do this. First of all, in state is defined to bring some F phi zero, some primary field in a theory to zero. So I always have that. That's definition. Now I don't know what I should do. Whenever that happens in doing algebra, you do a commutator, because somehow we know a lot about commutators. And the nice thing is this vanish because our vacuum is nice. And this thing is this mathematical fun fact we figured it out here. Now we just have to read out what n equals zero is. So when n equals zero, this disappears. Because then we're going to take the limit w equals zero, so this just disappears. And then n equals zero gives you the one, one, so it's that thing. So you get this because of that fun fact over there. You just take an n equals zero. Right? Aha! I can write this guy back to be our in state. Oh, even better. From now on, we're going to use the conformal weight. Nope, that's the last word. We're going to use the conformal weight to label our in state. So instead of writing in state all the time, now we know that it's our highest. Well, let's say it's a state under the energy momentum operator come with the eigenvalue. We don't know if it's the highest weight state is, but it's something good enough that L0 is indeed analogous to J3 because it acts on the state, it reads off some number. Okay, well, we'll figure out if it's the...
Why is the second term zero? The L5?
Well, because we're taking W to zero. So it's W to the... W to the power one, those are that part zero.
Yeah.
Good. I found another board. Amazing. Okay. So now let's do Ln acting. Let's split it up. Let's do the positive guys first. So Ln acting on phi is going to be acting on the H, analogous to the calculation we just did, which I should do it on one side of the board, but this is what we need to do. I just changed, the technique didn't change. We turned them into commutators. N bigger than one, our vacuum is nice. So this thing goes away. And then if you read it off, for n bigger or equals to one, all the coefficients vanish. So there's nothing left. So the first part is also zero because of this fun fact. N equals one, you still have one term left, but n equals zero, you still have one term left, which is what we want. But as soon as n goes become positive integer, that thing just vanish. Ah, it's very nice, isn't it? So this must be the raising operator we're seeking after. So this is what J plus does. It acts on the state and it vanish. So this is draw an analogy of J plus. And now we should really do the other half of the guys, which is L minus N acting H. Well, it's hard to figure out what this thing is. The easy thing to figure out is what's the energy of this guy. So you're acting at L0 on L minus N, and you wonder what this state is. After all, that's how you figure out J minus acting some state is going to lower the spin. Is you look what's the new eigenvalue. So this, as usual, we have no idea how to do things, and then we swap them. And hopefully we have some idea. Whenever we're stuck, we sweep things around. And this is when our Virasoro algebra finally comes in. This gives N, L minus N acting on H. And that guy gives H. So then we have H plus N, the same state. So we conclude L minus N acting on H is the state with energy H plus N, which is a good thing because energy is bounded below. If it's the other way, it's bad. N is still bigger or equals one because I used the minus sign there. Sorry. So this is very good. This is called energy is bounded below. It's also very good. This makes this operator is analogous to J minus, which acting on some state and produce another eigenstate of L0. Or in the SU2 language, another state of eigenvalue of J3. So now we can make a comparison between Virasoro algebra versus SU2 algebra. We start to realize L0 is analogous to J3, which they are called the Cartan generators. So we build the Hilbert space using the eigenstates of the Cartan generator. And then we draw an analogous between J plus and Ln, which so N is bigger or equal to 1. Says they are the raising operator. Okay, this is a misnomer. But the idea of the raising operator is they are going to annihilate the highest weight state. And then you can draw an analogous between J minus and L minus N, which is the lowering operator or the creation operator. And then you have the highest weight state over there, which for energy wise, it's the lowest energy, but it's called the highest weight state anyway. And then you have the other generic state. And this has some generic state such as, I guess I can label them as H plus N. And this state is obtained by J minus, bunch of J minus acting on the highest weight state, and this state is obtained by L minus N1, L minus NI, L minus NL, whatever, acting on the highest weight state. And it's this part where the infinity number of generators, the complexity comes in. You can, in this way, if you say I lowered from J to M, if I need three steps in my ladder, it's always 3J minus. But for this, it can be all sorts of combination of things, which we'll explore a little bit now. So.
Question.
Yes.
So if you act on a state with L,
yeah,
minus N over 2, but twice, that gives you a difference in orthogonal state to it.
Yes. Excellent idea. That's what I'm going to do tomorrow. We're going to explore the low is the thing that we can do that, which is N equals 2. So we'll actually explore the state built by L minus 2 and the state built by L minus 1 squared. Indeed, there's something very interesting happening. And that's basically the, yeah, that's very important. We say, oh, okay, we build, those are degenerate states, and we'll find something called the null state. But that will come up tomorrow. Like that's, we will spend maybe half of the lecture trying to explore that. And that's the reason why one of the miracle that we're going to mention that the null state is why we claim that we never worry about the descendant states. After we find them, we're like, okay, whatever. It doesn't come, all the correlation function of them can be related to the correlation function. So now, let's just build our Hilbert space, which the problem you pointed out comes up again. It's a very good question. It's like, right now, we're going to talk about it. So we have level 0. Says we have one state, and then the energy of this state is H. And now we have level 1. So L minus 1 acting H is going to be proportional to H plus 1. That has no problem. But level 2, we already have the problem Fer pointed out, is that I can either pick L minus 2, or I can pick L minus 1 to the 2. What's going on? Then we're going to explore the linear combination of the very particular linear combination become very important tomorrow. And then there's level 3. So now we have even more choices. I have L minus 3, L minus 2, L minus 1, and I have L minus 1 to the 3. So what we just realized that you can go all the way down to level, I don't know, N, then you can have, basically what we're doing is partition the integer N in some way, and then you can do sum of N, sum over I, N I equals N, then you can have L minus N1, L minus N2, L minus N I, and then to some power 2, acting H. But this eventually will be an eigenstate with this much energy. But there is some crazy thing going there, which is a huge degeneracy because it's basically how many methods you can partition integer N when N goes large. Then it's a large number. I think the notes has something precise formula of that, but I can't remember. Okay, so we're basically done with building the Hilbert space. This is the Hilbert space. So the last thing we want to know, and maybe second to last thing to do, is how now we have descendant states. Since there is a state operator correspondence, it's sensible to ask what's the operator corresponding to the descendant state. So this is interesting. So we have done quite a bit today. So here is a trivia question. What does playing Quidditch in Hogwarts have anything in common with learning quantum field theory?
What was the first stuff?
Huh?
What was the first element?
Playing Quidditch in Hogwarts, like in Harry Potter.
In Hogwarts?
And learning field theories.
It's a total fantasy.
I love your explanation too. See, all these questions, they can have multiple answers. They might be equivalent. Oh, your answer might be better. I love it. But my answer is in both cases, you need a magic broom. Either will make you fly. I just sweep things you don't want to enter the car. Okay, now what we need is the same broom. We're gonna recover things from the carpet. So remember, I often tell you that I only care about the divergence term of the OPE. So this is the same OPE I'm writing over and over again, but now I'll recover them as dot, dot, dot. Otherwise, I have to write the similar sign. But if I uncover them, says they are dot, 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 at least they show up. Okay, so this descendant state is basically defined to be says that we're going to write this collectively as Z minus W 2 minus N. This is really a very formal definition. As that. So then that all the regular term has been captured in this formula. Then the idea why this is a sensible thing to do is N equals zero. Yeah, we recovered that. Since it's zero, the descendant should just be itself, N equals zero. There's no descendant yet. And the nice thing about this formula is if you send N equals one, you realize the first descendant operator is partial phi. Remember, this partial thing is our momentum operator. And they kind of, it's a step up and down with the dilatation operator from like last week. Actually, the first week, you have learned that this is the momentum operator. And building descendant, it really is using, basically, you use a lot of derivatives. And then the rest is formula dependent. So if you recovered this regular term, you will find the descendant. So for example, here is a very fun fact. So suppose I want to look at some other operator product descendant and then want to recover some descendants. One thing we can do is there's identity operator. That operator always exists. Let's see what the OPE looks like. Well, this thing as we demand should be some sensible regular term. And if you look at the rest of the part, it has Z minus W squared, identity has conformal dimension zero. And then the next term is the partial derivative of identity, which also gives me zero. So we're at a form of zero, zero plus zero, blah, 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 blah. And then what you conclude is, interesting. Apparently, this energy momentum tensor we always talk about is actually the second descendant of identity operator. Okay, so we have 6 minutes, 5 minutes. So let's look at our miracle then. So basically, now we have descendant operator, and it's only just formally defined. It might be funny to write it that way, and you're like, this is not that helpful. The reason that we want to go to detail to figure out how exactly we find our descendant operator is the following of miracle. The miracle says that they don't matter. Descendant operator, whatever, this L minus and hat file things, do not matter. And why is that so? So remember all the physics, when we say physics, we really meant correlation functions. And in order to figure out if this guy's matter or not, since Tz is basically all of this descent, Tz and the phi, OPE is all of this descendant. Let's just first make them all together. And it says, I'll study the following thing. So hopefully this thing will enlighten me why these things do not matter. Because this have the information about all the descendant operators. So I want to study this with the following contour integral. So basically it says it has an insertion, phi 1, phi 2, phi j, phi n, and I want to study the contour at when z is very far away. And for contour integrals, and they were like, why do you propose to calculate this thing? Because contour integrals has this great property. It says I can deform that contour integral to be a bunch of smaller contour integrals around each point. Because as long as you capture the insertions, you got all the poles, we're good. But the other parts, they don't give me anything anyway. So basically what I'm saying is that contour integral can be a sum of these CJs, which is around each point. And then the only thing that I really care for each of them is when this Tz is close to one of them. The other guys can be considered to be far away, right? And this is the time we happily replace this with the definition of that. Well, actually, we happily replaced by the OPE, because we're doing contour integrals. What really mattered is the divergence part. So now we have something like h phi over z minus w j square plus partial phi z minus w. Now we can really drop the other terms because we're in the contour integral. So this crazy thing become a summation of these guys. But what we want to do now is to pull out this operator, which I have h over z minus w d squared plus partial over z minus w. I decide I'll first calculate the correlation function. And then we'll act by this differential operator afterwards. Okay. Right? So on the other hand, by definition, this encodes the information about this. This has the whole tower of our descendant operator there. So the reason there is this epsilon z tagging around all the time is now I conclude since this holds for arbitrary epsilon z, the infinite parameter, I can just drop it. So that if there's two integrals, one of them is crazy, but if this holds for all epsilon z, the integrand must be the same. I dropped all this integral like throughout the place. So now I can drop it. So the left-hand side, according to this definition, indeed has this z minus w. So suppose now I drop the integrand and claim this guy is closest to, because I drop the counter integral one way, right on tz, it must be closest to one of them. And I suppose it's the last guy. So then I can use that definition. Okay, something. So Wn is just where it is. So when I drop the counter integral, and there is this phi at W1 through phi at Wn minus 1, since my, without loss of I don't get that in English, but without loss of that thing. Sorry. And then I just say, I assume t, the point t is at z, is the closest to Wn, such I can do this. And on the other side, I have that, which is a sum over j, some crazy differential operator, and then, which is a function of Wj, but we can always use the fun trick says Wj must be able to separate it like that. So that we can, this is only related to this. But the idea is now we can collect the like terms of this and drop some sum and then compare and all whatever says there's primary field, some decedent. Should it be equal to some crazy operator acting on only primary? So all these crazy things, like what we want to prove, is that if you have a decedent operator correlation function, you can always write it as primary differential operator acting on primary correlation function. So then from now on, we never really care about these decedents, except that the confer, we figured out how to pronounce your name after. Yeah. Except that that what he points out, hey, some today it's very degenerate, and some level of that operator, for example, level 2, you already have a 2-level degeneracy. And that's actually a good thing. So what happened tomorrow is that you realize this is a crucial part that we claim that 2D CFT is the solvable. It lies on the fact that the sum of this descendant, when you do linear combination of them, you realize some descendant, they are primary too. It's possible. It's like when you learn the differential geometry, there's the like closed, then there's the. So some of the descendants are primary themselves. When that happens, actually, the left correlation function, they are called the null state, because the correlation of a null state with anything else gives you zero. So in the particular case, when decedent is a primary, then you, it's called null. And when that happens, this side vanishes. So you really have a differential equation of the primary operators. Then you can just solve the differential equation. It wouldn't be easy to solve, but in principle, you will find out all the correlation functions of the primary you like. And I think you're going to do something similar that for the 2D icing model. And you actually find the OPE of three primary field. No, no, the correlation function of three primary field is exactly using that. Okay, now we're done.